Blog Talk Radio.
I'm trying to get something up here on my computer, and again, it's not doing so good. Huh. I don't know why. Well, very strange. I thought I've got an error or something popped up, and I'm having difficulty. Oh, of course, antivirus. Get your antivirus free just in time. I don't want that. Thank you very much. And I want to end this now. Thank you very much. Because it's locked by the system. It cannot be closed because it's locked by the system. Oh, that's good to know. Huh. Interesting. Hang on, folks. That's okay. Yeah. Alright. Well, anyway, I wrote this poem back on the 20th. About 9 days ago, a lot of time goes by fast. But, and I've been wanting to read it because it's karmic in a sense. And that a couple of days back, I took a Tuesday took a fall, and I banged myself up a little bit. And I have to say, I'm too impressed that happened. But I realized that I was I'm trying to make something happen here. I'm just messing it up even more. So anyway, what I wanted to say was this poem that I wrote called The Fall. And it's about karma, basically. And it says, "In my darkest hour, I ignored the sirens and transcended reality into a deep sleep. I fell into darkness that twisted my soul. I saw my face trying to escape my gaze. I fell and had to crawl. The clumsiness of my life overwhelmed the spiral speed of descent, and my mind crashed into oblivion. Karma came at me like a comet. I saw its light before I fell and continued in denial, spiraling out of control. I continued to spin until my direction changed, and I awoke as the darkness left the sky and the sun began to rise." That's honestly what kind of oddly enough is what happened. It's difficult to say because it's kind of difficult to understand because at that the last couple of months I've been undergoing some odd emotional upheavals in the sense that I haven't been able to concentrate very well, and I've been having a lot of strange dreams and a lot of strange episodes of not really knowing what to do. So I got to a point where I understood, I began to understand what was happening. And I believe karma was taking over in its way as it does. Created for me a very strange I'm not sure if I can understand this, but it created for me a very unusual place to be in, a place that I wasn't really expecting to be. But I was. And I'm trying to, and in my in perspective here, that's put things in perspective. I'm trying to, I want to believe that I can I wrote this other poem, and it's called Forgetting It All. I can't remember their faces or why I should remember them. I remember they were once close to me, like a family, but if they were, how could I forget them? Their entire existence is fading from my memory. Who or what they were or are, I can no longer see. They're faceless and nameless people I've never really known or seen. Blurs of faded memory. I don't remember anything about them, and I'm not sure why, except for some vague notion that they were once part of my life, and somewhere, at some time, but I don't remember where or when. Forgetting is not the same as forgiving. I must remember who I am forgiving before I can forgive them. Forgiveness is something saints do, and I have never tried to be a saint. I'm not a Christian or Buddhist, Hindu or Jew, Muslim or atheist. I'm just a man like most men who live and work, eat, drink, think, sleep, love, hate, and cry. My memory is not what it once was, especially for things I want to forget, like hard times, ex-wives, past illnesses, bad situations, great despair, disappointments, and lies. Great friends I will never forget, and great love I will hold in my heart. Great beauty I will always remember. Everything and everyone I want to forget, I will forget forever. And I guess that's what I wanted to say. So, anyway, considering that, I now want to go to kind of a full explanation of karma. I wrote this many years ago, or a number of years ago. I don't know how many years ago, but I did. See that one. That's so strange. That is so strange. Until I can get this thing fixed, I'm really sorry, folks, to interrupt this. I was on a roll here, but I want to go to a quick music break, and I'll get back to you as soon as I can within the next few minutes, or within the next minute. All right? So stay tuned. I'll be right back. Thank you. right. I'll put back. And I need just a couple more seconds here, and we're going to video show up there with the folks. We'll be right back.
What it's like to be mortal.
you know, and to have only so many years, you know, to exist. It makes you appreciate immortality, but it also makes you appreciate your mortality, right? And how to fill your life up with all these remarkable feelings and for people and things and places and yourself and love and hate and all everything, you know, sadness, grief, exhilaration. You know, that's all part of being human. And my good friend George Dixon used to say, we're spirits having a human experience, you know. So that's basically the way we have to look at things. But anyway, the universal laws of karma, George Eliot stated that there are many universal laws which are above the laws of any country. To quote a few, there are laws of gravity, electricity, interstellar planetary forces, weather, and the Earth revolving on its own axis. There are also laws of like begets like, whatever that means, and above so below. There are innumerable more laws which act upon and control the entire universe and us. These are the laws that no country or international laws or dictators can annul or eradicate. The laws that concern us most here are karma and reincarnation. For every universal law, there is a reason for it. For instance, the law of gravity is there to prevent us from falling off the earth. A definition of karma. What is karma? Karma is the Sanskrit word for action. It is equivalent to Newton's law of every action must have a reaction. When we think, speak, or act, we initiate a force that will react accordingly. This returning force may be modified, changed, or suspended, but most people will not be able to eradicate it. This law of cause and effect is not punishment, but is wholly for the sake of education or learning. A person may not escape the consequences of his actions, but he will suffer only if he himself has made the conditions ripe for his suffering. If he were to continue acting in such a way that the retribution cannot come about because the conditions are not appropriate, then he may postpone the fruition of his karma. If he can suspend it until he is in the spirit world, then he may work at this particular karma in his intermission between death and the next life. Or he may wait until another life in which he is more developed so he can glean the educational value of this retribution. Conversely, his life could be so derelict that the blessings due him cannot fructify until a later date or a subsequent life. All of these fall into the category of suspension of karma to a more propitious period of life. That's fascinating. So it kind of explains to us why we get hit with something quickly and why some people don't get hit at all for their actions, and some people can suspend their actions and karma. I don't know. I've always had difficulty understanding that concept, but I have another thing that I wanted to read to you. Hopefully I get back to it, and it talks about the 7-year wave of karma. Okay, and that's a fascinating thought. Karma works in the 7-year wave, or 7-year waves, and I'll mention it. I'll talk about it in a little while. But it says, does karma preclude chance? Some authors think that there is no place for chance in the law of karma. They think that chance cannot play any part in the unfolding of karma. What about incidents and happenings that are non-karmic in origin? Do they occur? Well, Edgar Cayce certainly believed they do. Many a case was brought to him, and he deemed them not to be karmic in origin. Some of these are due to the fact that an individual wanted to learn a lesson, say, on starvation. He subsequently asked for a life where he starved to death. As we are learning and living with other people, the unfolding of their karma could accidentally involve us in a passive way. However, the purists would say that even here, there was some linkage to the distant past. What about national karma, which implicates us, even though we have not erred? The rationale here is that we are members of a group, soulmates, and therefore we live together and err together. The soulmates that stayed together and perpetrated certain negative activities together would finally find themselves born in the same nation. There may not be 100% commitment in all these citizens, but with their silence, they tacitly gave consent. Notwithstanding the occasional accident due to associations of soulmates, all in all, karma certainly plays a predominant role in the major events of our lives. If accidents form the major part of the causes of events, then karma cannot function as a law. So the purists have a point here. True happenstance makes a mockery of the law of karma. So how is karma caused? Of all the sentient beings, we humans are the only ones that possess self-consciousness. That means we begin to ask questions of who am I? Where am I? Why am I here? Where do I go from here? Then we begin to realize right and wrong, because the establishment of the self and selflessness, or selfishness rather. We can only become selfish because we have free will. If everything were fated, then we would have been robots without responsibility. This is the rub. With karma as the guiding law, we must be totally responsible for our actions. What that means is we have to suffer the consequences of our thoughts, speeches, and action, and whether we are wholesome or unwholesome. Self-conscious humans are now able to have concepts with which we can plan our future on the material side of things. Planning means intention, and it is intention that counts for most in karma production. If one's intention were salutary, then the karma produced would be good, even though the result is negative. If the intention were evil or selfish, then the karma produced would be bad, even if the result is beneficial. Which I thought was wild. The next point to consider is that not every action is karma productive. For instance, no one knows that the glass contains poison. And if one believes that one's luck is so good that the poison would not affect one, then one drinks the poison. The result is fatal. This is not karma. It is stupidity. Right? It's like bungee jumping, you know, or parachute, you know, without a parachute, you know. Similarly, thinking that one's fate is so fine and powerful, he jumps from the third floor of a building thinking that nothing will touch him. This again is due to stupidity, and gravity kills him. These chemical reactions, poison and gravity, which give immediate results, are not karmic in nature. Karmic usually takes place for no apparent reason, for this cause might have originated from previous lives. We cannot remember the connection. Of course, in this vast, fast-moving world, karma is coming back to us very quickly. For instance, a young man who started to accumulate his millions through wheeling and dealing with unsavory methods became a millionaire by the time he reached 50 years old. But the present currency turmoil taking place in his region devastated him completely in 6 months. This is his karma returning like a boomerang. He ends up a bankrupt and may even go to jail for his ego pursuits. Of course, if his karma is carried over to the next life, he will deem it as bad luck during that life because he cannot see the connection. Now, summarizing, we have free will, we have intention, and we must be responsible for our thoughts, speech, and action. The fundamental and basic principle is simple. Whatever we do to benefit ourselves and to hurt others produces bad karma. Whatever we do to benefit others will generate good karma. Well, therefore, any thought that is inimical to others should be avoided. Any speech that is detrimental to others should be uttered, should not be uttered. And any action that will benefit the self and hurt others should never be contemplated, let alone be enacted. The above are general principles with regards to action. Thought and speech are taken as action here. The next thing to consider is desire and attachment. Ill will, selfishness, and pride are also karma productive. Buddha said that craving is the cause of suffering. He elaborated that the craving leads to desire, clinging, and attachment. All these karma-productive traits not only end up in suffering, but to rebirth, which is much worse. When we merely enjoy one of the sensual objects and there is no attachment involved, karma is not produced. However, after enjoying the object, an attachment or clinging ensues, and this is fraught with karma. That means we can enjoy but not yearn for it afterwards. Yearning, clinging, and attachments are all seeds of karma production. One can desire or crave for physical things as well as mental, emotional objects. Concepts are equally dangerous. Desire and craving for sensual objects. Out of the six sense objects, sex is the most alluring, being the force behind the reproductive system. It must be made strong and powerful for the humans to perpetrate the human race. If there is no pleasure in sex, the human race will die out in no time. The next object is food and wine. These cravings are accepted by our social customs, and therefore, if anyone were to indulge in either, it is quite in order. However, together with drugs and cigarettes, these are consumed to addictive proportions. These objects per se do not produce karma. One may become obese, alcoholic, or drug addict, but on its own it does not produce karma. It is the craving and the attachment that is karma productive. Now, that's interesting. It's what you crave. It's what you crave that makes you do crazy things, you know, and self-destruct. Emotional reaction and thoughts. The emotional reactions to the six sense objects are above at the first contact are, as above at the first contact, are pleasure, displeasure, or neutral. With pleasure, clinging, and attachments will arise as emotional memories. These, in turn, will lead to constant yearning and longing, and these would lead to karma production. Similarly, with displeasure, the aversion and resentment will also be karma productive. In other words, these emotional reactions would consolidate as emotional memories. When the latter are fixated as negative and positive thoughts with emotional desire and aversion, they would generate karma even though nothing is done about it. Similarly, with only thoughts and concepts, these will also produce karma when these intentions are a prelude to speech and action. So thought, speech, and action will generate negative karma if the intention is to consolidate the self. Conversely, it will generate good karma if thought, speech, and actions are for the sake of others. If these actions are merely passing phrases, then hardly any karma will be produced. However, if these actions are fixated and the attachments are strong, then karma will surely ensue. Not all actions will produce karma. Millions of things that you think, say, or act are neutral. These are daily chores like eating one's meal, opening bowels, and having a bath. While watching TV, reading, and exercise are karma neutral. All these activities are not to aggrandize oneself or hurt others. They are just done to keep one alive. And the problem is that most people, myself included, we produce karma. We produce karma as we hate, you know. We dig ourselves deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And sometimes we can't. This is why I said in the poem I read earlier about forgetting it all. Sometimes the hurt is so great, or the loss, or the theft, or the grief, or whatever it is so powerful that we can't forgive it. We can't forgive it, the people who do it, or, you know, how it's done. We can't. Or we can't forgive ourselves for doing things, you know. And it's very difficult, you know, to get out of that memory, you know, and get out of that funk that you're in, that karma you've created, that you've dug a hole in. And, you know, and the stuff comes back at you like, you know, just comes back at you. And what you got to do, to me, is you got to forget it. You have to forget it. You have to forget people. You have to forget things. You have to forget what you did because, you know, it just eats you alive, you know, when you try to make sense out of the things, when they don't make any sense. They're just mean or vindictive or evil or, you know, insane. And, you know, when you're dealing with insanity, wow, you know, you can't, I mean, if anybody's ever dealt with an insane person, or a person who's just totally lost their minds, which I have. I mean, I have. I've known several. And you cannot imagine, you know, you just can't, you're not dealing with a normal person. So you can't accept what they're doing as normal. You can't take offense to what they've done or said or did to you, you know, because they're crazy. They're crazy as hell, all right? They don't even know what they did. If they do, they're just, you know, it's like insanity. These people should be locked up, and some of these people have been locked up. So it's like, you know, you find yourself in positions in your life or in situations in your life that aren't yours. You didn't create them that way for them to be that way. They just happen. And you got very hurt by it. And you don't know why it happened. You just can't make any sense of it. And you just pray that it never happens again and you got out safely. But, you know, you have to forget it. And forgiving it is impossible. You may be looking at scars your whole life and say, Jesus Christ, you know, how can I forgive that? You know, you may be crippled by something. You may be, have post-traumatic stress. You may, you know, whatever. You may have been tortured. You may have been brutalized. You may have been... How do you forgive these kind of people? You can't forgive these actions. All you can do is forget it. All right? Those people that create hurt to others, you know, they get the hurt back. That's what karma is. And they just create their own bad karma. Probably one of the greatest, I think I mentioned this before on different shows, but one of the greatest lectures I've ever been seen was by a Buddhist patriarch, Sakya Trizin, in a lecture that I was able to film and honored to film. He wrote about, he talked about wisdom and compassion and the samsara wheel and how we are constantly reincarnating because we can't get off the wheel of karma, you know, the wheel of sorrow, samsara. But the only way that we can break the cycle of endless reincarnations, endless sorrow, is by having wisdom and compassion. And the wisdom to recognize and understand what's happening to us. And compassion for other people that we see and know and hear and feel what they're going through. So, you know, we might be able to help them or identify with them and know what they're going through to and learn from their experiences, because so that we don't, if it happens to us, we know how to react. These are things. But the way to get off the samsara wheel and the way to find eternal happiness and bliss is through the wisdom and compassion. And by wisdom, you know, you hope that after how many lives, you know, you've lived, just as how many years you may live in one life, you develop wisdom, you know, and you hope you develop compassion for other people. But once you do, then what happens is you create good karma. You produce good karma, all right, and you can produce enough good karma in one lifetime to get you off the samsara wheel, you know, where you become karma-less, okay? And it's interesting because when I, this reading that I had by Joan Kilgan, and she's, I believe she may have a website, I'm not sure, but it's a karmic astrologer. And she told me that I had come back reincarnated. I was reincarnated because I came back with some heavy duty karma that I had to work out. Extreme duty. Kind of like my past life, I was abandoned by my mother. In the past life, I had tons of things but I wanted to completely rectify all of my karma in this one lifetime. All the karma so that I wouldn't have to come back. So I wouldn't have to continue to go on this samsara wheel. I took in everything I could take with this, everything I could possibly bear in this life. I put on my back, in other words, and I jumped in and I tried to do the impossible, you know. Which is true. I mean, I've tried so many crazy things, you know, this included, this show that I do, and I continue to do, but this is something that I felt I must do. I must teach. I must bring this stuff forward. I make people understand, help people understand how to end, what's going on, you know, bring light to them. Based on my own readings, my own life, my own experiences, and my own wisdom and compassion, if you will, and I want to share that. But let me just finish this. Let me I've got only 15 minutes here with this show, but I want to read the varieties of karma. Under this heading, we can consider karmic ties with our stars, planet, earth, our country, locality, race, religion, nuclear and outer family, our relative, distant relatives, friends, work, mates, and underlings. The universe is about 6 billion years old, and the planet Earth is about 5 billion years old. From mineral through vegetable and animal, the predecessors of man arrived on Earth about more than 3 million years ago. The first human was Homo habilis, who lived in Africa about 2.5 million years ago. Then 1.5 million years ago, man started to walk upright, and he was called Homo erectus. And after more than a million years of evolution, modern man, Homo sapiens, came into being about 200,000 years ago. The Neanderthal, who was the first Homo sapien, also existed roughly 200,000 years ago. And suddenly they became extinct 35,000 years ago. Therefore, most of us should have souls of at least 2 million years old. That's fascinating, yeah? And this would have ensured us of several hundreds of thousands of incarnations. Just imagine how much karma each of us has accumulated. Therefore, at birth, the underlying karmic forces are exerting such an influence that nobody is born equal. Firstly, we are born under a set of stars, and our astrological horoscopes would be the blueprint for our G-plan, our life plan. I told you about this. Astrological chart that I was given. And this renders the birthday and times most important for the individual, even though it is a cesarean birth. However, each of us would have made plans in the astral world before coming down. Our G-plan, our group, our souls must have come down to Earth time and again together. Very rarely an old soul might choose another planet. As humans, we mostly choose the familiar, and like begets like. In discussing racial karma, the Jews, Germans, and the Japanese mostly choose to come back as Jews, Germans, and Japanese. The other races tend to mix up more. Looking at moments of birth, armed with our G-plan, the stars align themselves to the life we are about to go through. The G-plan was entirely worked out on the basis of our karmic balances while we are in the spirit world. The soulmate that came down together, had common karma to work through, group karma, and the country that we were born in was also part of our karmic heritage. So the stars, the earth, the country, nationality, and soulmates are all interconnected through the karmic cords that hold us all together. Then, as we come closer to nuclear and immediate and distant families and friends, the karmic pot thickens. The planet Earth is also called Gaia, named after a Greek goddess. Gaia has its own spirit and karma. The way we are plundering and abusing Gaia, it is no wonder that the boomerang effect of karma caused by humans is beginning to resound itself. Few examples of these are deforestation by fires, underground nuclear explosions, the building of hydroelectric dams, and the planting with explosions of landmines, to name a few. This global karma is beginning to make itself felt, and recent spat of earthquakes, volcanic explosions, hurricanes, and tornadoes is just the tip of an iceberg. More and worse is yet to come, for on the other hand, it is not going to be the end of the world. For wayward humans still require Gaia to practice on. We're still practicing, folks. In a mixed population, there may be one nation, but there are many faces. So in a mixed population, if one becomes good friends or enemies with the other races, this signifies that one's karmic net is truly wide. Therefore, racial karma in this instance is not identical with national karma. The United States, Singapore, and Malaysia are in the same position. In the case of the Jews, they may not have a country to call their own for thousands of years, yet they remain a cohesive race spread all over the world. It is only in recent years that the state of Israel is born And now the Jews can state that they are one race, one nation. National karma always supersedes racial and individual karma. Take, for instance, the present financial turmoil that is pervading the Southeast Asian countries. It has taken its toll on all of the sun-dry, whether nation, whether rich or poor, seemingly good or bad in whichever race. More are affected, but a few have been less unscathed. These very few must have earned enough beneficial karma to protect them from this onslaught. These people are mostly unattached and non-materialistic. In fact, these Asian countries have been working towards this turmoil for the last 20 years, and there has been a persistent pursuit of wealth and materialism in these countries to a feverish pitch. There is no soul and no spirituality. Love, compassion, and service have all gone to the wind, and the spiritual individuals can see it coming a mile away, but not the economists. The geography of locality of a place also possess karma from the history and the spirit of the area. The bad overtone produced by the underlying spirits of deceased people, as well as the earth and vegetation of the place, very often affect adversely the people moving there to stay. The geographical karma is much more powerful than the individual karma. And a former graveyard is a very good case in point. And, you know, it's fascinating what they're saying here, because, you know, if we understand if we try to understand this, it takes on it clears up so many questions, you know, that you have about your own life. I don't know if I'm going to get a chance to finish this tonight, but I'd like to talk about one thing that most people understand, and right now, I'm sure everybody has gone through it, you know, or many, many people through Thanksgiving, but the family karma. The strongest karmic ties are seen in the nuclear family. The two greatest threads are between husband and wife and parent and child. We all chose to come down in these respective relationships. For many lives, we come down in different permutations and combinations. If a very good friendship is established in one life, one of them may decide to be born as a son or a daughter to another in the next life. My son was a friend of mine in the last life, this guy was writing. Husband and wife relationships in the past may also be happy ones. In fact, quite often, it is the opposite. That's interesting. He's saying that often husband and wives may have not been happy in the last lives. Dr. Hiroshima Motoyama found that it is not unusual for one spouse to be the murderer of the other. In most cases, there is karma to resolve between husband and wife. And very, very few couples marry because of previous harmony or due to elevated spiritual growth. They do occur, but they are very few in numbers. The couples that marry because of sexual passion very often end up in divorce because there is no karmic force to keep the marriage going. In the case of couples that marry due to karmic ties, there is motivation to continue with the marriage because of the necessity to resolve the karma between the spouses. Whatever it is, both should ensure that there is no residual animosity between them when they leave this world. Longevity of a marriage is a good sign, and quite often when one spouse dies, the other follows suit within 2 years. If one is dependent on the other, this happens in spite of the fact that there are numerous quarrels between them during marriage. That means both have resolved their karma to a greater or smaller extent. This general theme applies to homosexual couples as well. In a heterosexual marriage, the husband who is suffering from pathological jealousy, a well-known psychological condition, could very well be a very promiscuous man in his last life. Now, in this life, he is suffering from this disease in which he continuously suspects his wife, who was his spouse the last time, of infidelity. The marriage becomes a very difficult one, and it requires a Herculean endeavor to sustain the marriage. The iconic part of this inherited disease is that the man with the disease is quite often unfaithful himself, and most of these marriages end up in divorce because the husband suspects every man that turns up, sometimes ending it in a situation in which the poor wife is locked up whenever the husband leaves the house. In the olden days, a chastity belt was used. It is essentially a male disease. And twin souls, do twin souls marry? Of course they do, but very seldom. And siblings and close relatives. Two siblings can be very close. When one sees that this proximity is so obvious that there is a strong karmic bond between them, they could also be a very intense and animated rivalry, which can be deemed as karmic in origin. In twins, the closeness manifested gives one no doubt about their past relationships. And except for some unusual cases, sibling rivalry does not go beyond childhood, does not go beyond adulthood. Most of the siblings use the parents as stepping stones for venturing out into their own G-plan. In this instance, a good friend is even closer than a sibling is. From here onward, we move away to cousins and in-laws, etc., widening the circle to include more and more distant relatives. And the principles enumerated above all apply as well, except that generally the karmic ties are less and less intense as one moves toward the periphery. And, so that's the case with them. Can karma be suspended, modified, or eliminated? Yeah. Karma does not come about as regularly as the night that follows day. It can be suspended for the following reasons. There must be a time and place to repair debt. In modern society, when we grow a large sum of money to buy a house, we usually ask for a period of time before we can complete pay the entire debt. We have a choice here as to the length of time we need to pay off the debt. As humans, we have the freedom of choice. Normally, in a housing loan, we can pay back or by installments. In karma, although we may do the same, we prefer to gather strength in the intervening centuries and perhaps clear some of them in the spirit world. However, the major portion of karma has to be paid back finally in one life. In the intervening period, we would have developed spiritually. Consequently, we are able to face our karma with greater wisdom and strength. In addition, we would also like to choose the time for its appearance because the conditions are more appropriate. And that's more or less what I did, and according to what I was told, and according to the outcome of my life, I can definitely understand that's true and why I have such a stubborn nature and such an obstinate personality. Can karma be modified or changed? The answer is a definite yes. Firstly, we must recognize that we have injured the other person. Then we ask for forgiveness for that person. At the same time, we must also forgive ourselves and the person in order to lay the pathway for the karma to be modified. Well, parapasu, we, I don't know what that means, we ourselves must U-turn or grow spiritually. How do we do that? We must purify ourselves of our foibles. Then we must now extend service to others to such an extent that it becomes our goal in life. And lastly, we should either pray or meditate to increase our vibrations, which all these practices we are able to postpone the retribution from appearing now to or more propitious rather time. In the same token, we should be able to modify our karma to a much more palatable form. In the Buddhist sense, we make sure that the conditions are not right for the present, and hopefully, after many decades or centuries of development, we'll be stronger to face the karma when it does appear. And that's what I'm trying to do. Can karma be eliminated? Again, the answer is yes, but it is almost an impossibility for most of us. one has to realize that the self or the soul first. That means that we have to reach a spiritual height of Christ consciousness. Christ consciousness is not the exclusive property of the followers of Jesus Christ. It is the same as bodhika, bodhicitta in the Buddhist parlance. It is the self-realization of moksha in the Hindus. And this is the stage when our consciousness has reached the ultimate state, which is beyond the casual realm, or the causal realm, a divine state. In that state, we have transcended all states of consciousness below, and we are in the same plane as the absolute in cosmic consciousness. In this plane, all karma is annulled without exception. How many of us can be enlightened in this life? The paucity of these enlightened saints in one generation makes this method of elimination of karma like an impossible dream. Yeah. Imagine that, folks. So that's more or less what I'm trying to do. You know, I don't know if I'm not looking to be a saint, but I just don't want to have to come back here. You know? I'm tired of this stuff. Coming back. Can you imagine? Everyone had 100,000 lives. I don't know if I had 100,000 lives, but damn, you'd think you'd learn by now, you know? And this may be my very last life here on planet Earth. But where is karma stored? Every individual has at least 7 major chakras and 7 auric bodies in the Buddhist teaching. The storing of karma is dependent on whether the action is intentional or unintentional. If it is intentional, then repercussions accruing from these actions will arise, deepening on the conditions ensuing. The repercussions may be physical, emotional, mental, or spiritual. The recipient will then suffer or enjoy the result accordingly. However, if it is unintentional, the recipient may not suffer or enjoy the consequences. For instance, a wound inflicted by someone else in a previous life will only reappear as a birthmark in the present life without the physical handicap. Generally speaking, actions whereby there is attachment to the result will be stored in the astral body. In actions where there is no attachment to the result, karma is stored in the causal body. The causal body is never shed, no matter how developed we are, and it follows us life after life. It is in this body that the Akashic records are kept. This is the body that stores our past karma and our samskaras. Our G-plan life is also seen here. All these can be detected around our head and shoulders. And when one is developed to the ultimate consciousness, enlightened, one would be residing in a realm beyond the causal realm, and all karma is then annulled. Yeah, that's my hope. If one is still struggling physically to survive with attachment, then the first chakra is involved in the karmic manifestation. If one has great sexual desire, the chakra involved is the second. Strong emotions or anger, hatred, jealousy, joy, depression are stored in the third chakra. With love and compassion, the fourth chakra is the center involved. And the fifth chakra deals with attachment to purification, teaching, and singing. The sixth chakra is involved with attachment to knowledge and wisdom. All of these karma are stored in the respective chakras of the astral body, the fourth auric body. Whereas the result of actions without attachment will be stored in the causal body, where they are intentional or unintentional. This is because the perpetrator of the action is not acting for self, but for others. So all altruistic acts and services without attachment fall into this category. When karma is stored in the astral and causal bodies, the karma that has priority to manifest is the one that the most energy is in. There is strong attachment in the desire, and normally this pertains to those in the astral body. seeing those in the causal body are without attachment. They remain in the background until there is enough energy accrued for them to manifest. Therefore, the survival tendencies, the sexual urges, and the emotional volatility all tend to manifest in the current incarnation. Also, a dominant karma will suppress the manifestation of subsidiary or weaker karma. And the individual has to develop through many incarnations to come to a level where he can transcend all these tendencies, desires, and attachments. And that means he must progress in his spiritual growth. And it's now after, but there's only a paragraph left, so I'm going to finish this article. It says, the eradication of karma. This has been lightly touched upon earlier. We will now enumerate the steps we can take to achieve this. It will have to take many lifetimes, but the fact that we realize that we have to walk this path is itself very salutary. The disciplines involved are purification, service, and meditation or prayer. Purification, in this category, we basically have to work hard at letting go of cravings, desire, and attachment. B, ill will, which includes anger, hatred, jealousy, envy, and other negative emotions, and pride, and selfishness. Those are the four major things we have to get rid of, all right? Get rid of. Yeah, it's impossible, I'll tell you, it's hard. But we got to try. And one way I do it is forget. Just forget the stuff, you know. Forget is about the same as forgiving, but it's a lot easier. Just forget it, all right? Service. In this category, we have to service the mineral, vegetable, animal kingdom, and humans. In humans, we have to help our immediate families, distant relatives, and friends, and fellow colleagues and underlings. Not always. I don't believe that totally true, and I'll tell you why. Because, you know, you really, really get kicked in the ass and kicked in the teeth by these people. And, you know, this is not. I would throw that service right out the fucking window. And I'll tell you why. All right, because you service people, and people respect your service. You teach them, they respect your teaching. But, you know, you can service real schmucks. You can have real schmucks as family members, and you can't service them. So you just forget about them. Throw them out of your life. You know, it does the same. To me, it does the same as trying to service them. Forget it. You know, just forget it. Forget them. It doesn't matter. They forgot you. And if they haven't forgot you, kick them the hell out the door. You just don't want them in your life, you know. You don't want them there. You know, they just make a mess out of your life. They're like harpies, you know. And it's up to you to develop enough strength and karma, you know, and good karma, to kick them the hell out of your life. That ain't going to cause any bad karma. It's going to save you a lot of misery and a lot of hurt. So, that you bring on yourself. And meditation or prayer. In this category, it's better to meditate. In meditation, we expedite the process of letting go. The main goal of meditation is to empty one's mind, and it is during these periods of emptiness that we can reach the causal realm temporarily, only to come to earth again when we stop meditating. Summarizing, one does not need to resolve every karma earned in order to eradicate all karma. We merely have to be enlightened. And like I say, being enlightened doesn't mean, you know, servicing the world, you know, wiping everybody's ass. All it means is, do what you can, have some compassion, you know, and when you're sick and tired of dealing with them, kick them the hell out the door and let them fend for themselves. You don't want to deal with them anymore. You don't want to know about them. You know, they're a nightmare and they're screwing up your life. Get rid of them, you know. Forget about it. Forget them. Now, is that bad karma? I don't think so. You know, I don't think so. It's just, you know, part of karma that I believe in is self-preservation, you know. And there are more people out there that are willing to want to hurt you, want to steal from you, want to do bad things to you, right? And by loving them and kissing them and, you know, hugging them and you know, smiling at them, they're going to knock you out and kill you, right? That's reality. So try to avoid the positions you're in, bad situations. Try to avoid people that make you angry. Avoid people that are jealous and mean and envious and want to hurt you, you know. Just forget about them. Don't answer their phone calls. You know, tell them to get the hell away from you, you know. Go on their own. Forget about it. They'll get the point. And you'll be a lot happier person for it. So I want to thank everybody for joining me tonight. This is more or less the 7th anniversary of our internet show. It's also the 10th anniversary of our radio programs. And we have over 1,000 archive programs and, you know, probably another 200 or 300 FM programs. And on tape and archives, but we appreciate you listening. We hope you learned something tonight. Hope you had a wonderful holiday, and have a good life. And remember, yeah. Maybe I'll talk about this next week. There's another little section on 7-year waves of karma and so on that I'd like to talk about, and maybe we can get to that next week. But thanks for everything. Thanks for listening. Love y'all. And